From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Yeah, we might all end up moving to Belgium to escape 5G, maybe, with the Belgian Environment Minister, Céline Framault, halting a rollout of 5G in Brussels, which we covered, of course, earlier this week with Chris Busby. Anyway, how you doing? Are you well? It's a wet and miserable Thursday afternoon here in the great city of Manchester. Wet and windy, that's what we like, because that's what we know. Got a top show for you today, two brilliant guests.
Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
Yeah, the weekend must be on the way. Pressing the wrong buttons again.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, home educators are up in arms that the government has decided that it's the right thing to do to register homeschooled children. This is a very serious issue. And I've invited a lady on today who's written a terrific article in today's Daily Telegraph. Her name is Adele Jarrett Kerr. She's a home educator and a journalist. And she's written about these new plans to register home-educated children. Very important. Adele joins me this hour. And in the second hour, Max Egan is on the programme. I recorded Max earlier today because of the time difference, of course. He's in Australia. We're going to be talking about YouTube channels being deleted. His own channel has been severely restricted because of commentary on it about the Christchurch shootings, the mosque shootings, which left 50 people dead, of course. So Max Egan in the second hour. Packed old programme for Thursday. It is your Richie Allen Show, live right now on Fab Radio 2, triggerwarning.tv, TuneIn Radio, and richieallen.co.uk. Yes, yes, and I know there are listeners to this programme who are very proactive in terms of sending me tweets and stuff, who do educate at home. Do please drop in with your comments when Adele Jarrett Kerr is on the show in a few minutes' time, in about 20 minutes' time. All right, all right. Very interesting information on Boeing. And you heard this in the news there with Ollie Barrett. The Ethiopian Airlines plane crashed, of course, last month. It had nosedived several times before hitting the ground. And that is the result of a preliminary report. It said, the preliminary report, that the plane nosedived several times before crashing. The pilots followed procedures recommended by Boeing before the crash, according to this report. Despite those efforts, they were not able to control the aircraft. Now, the Egyptian Transport Minister, Dagmawit Moges, has been talking about this today. This is flight ET302, which crashed just after taking off from Addis Ababa Airport, killing 157 people. The second one, of course, because last October, Lion Air flight JT610 crashed into the sea near Indonesia with a horrible loss of life as well, all 189 people on board dying there. If you remember back to about 2 weeks ago, the broadcaster Tom Quiggin from the Quiggin Report was on this programme. Tom has been an aeronautical engineer in a previous life. Very smart fella, Tom. And he said to me on the programme last month, he got it spot on, did Tom Quiggin. He talked about the placement of the engines on this new aircraft. Engines further forward. And that affecting the trim. Didn't Tom say that? He said it was scary that the human pilots cannot wrestle control of the plane from the computer. Anyway, here's the travel editor for the Independent newspaper, Simon Calder, and he's also concerned about this, speaking a short time ago on Sky News. Simon Calder.
There are so many questions being asked. As we've discussed previously on Sky News, the 737 MAX is the latest variant of the most successful airliner in aviation history. And what they've done to make it more efficient is to lift the engines to put them further forward. That has, they decided at the design stage, increased the likelihood that the aircraft could tilt upwards at high speed and as a result of that possibly go into a stall. So they installed this software basically to say if the angle between the airflow and the wing becomes too steep, then the aircraft, in a kind of robotic response, will force the nose downwards. Now, that's a safety measure. However, it appears to be a measure that, first of all, was inappropriately designed, given that there appears to be, in the case of certainly the Lion Air crash last October, no redundancy built in. Secondly, there's questions about whether pilots have been properly informed about the software, what it can do, how to overcome it. And now we are learning today that even though they appear to make exactly the right responses, there was something about this software which prevented them from avoiding this terrible accident.
Yeah. And the questions will go on and on and on. Funnily enough, Boeing's share price rose upon this news that, you know, software was pushing the plane down and down and down and the pilots couldn't get out of it. This is very serious, right? We've talked on this program before about the Boeing uninterruptible autopilot, something completely different, but also very dangerous. Yeah, I think we'll be picking this one up next week, I think, with aviation experts. I would imagine the families are absolutely horrified at the knowledge that the pilots did their jobs, but yet couldn't wrestle control back of the aircraft and prevent it from diving into the ground. More on that, of course, as I said, very soon. It's all happening in the House of Lords today. That's the upper chamber. What's the House of Lords, Richie? I hear my American listeners cry. It's the upper chamber. I've talked about the House of Lords so many times on the programme before. It's full of unelected peers, right? Hereditary peers, life peers, peers appointed by the parties, basically donors who've donated millions to the various parties get peerages. And anything that's passed in the House of Commons, any bill, must be rubber stamped and signed off on by the upper chamber, the House of Lords, right? Okay, that's a very basic description of what it is. I could be here all day. Now, last night in the House of Commons, you'll probably know this, the Cooper-Letwin bill passed by only one vote. Yvette Cooper, Oliver Letwin. The bill means that the government cannot now leave the European Union with no deal. This is pretty dreadful, really. Leave voters even have been raging about this all day, saying it is the death of the last faint hope that the United Kingdom could properly leave. So like I said, it's in the upper chamber. It has passed the Commons by one vote. It is now being debated by the Lords, you see, in order for it to become law. It might be a late night there, because some peers are allegedly trying to delay the bill tonight by filibustering, where you obstruct the business of the House by talking and talking and talking, taking it in turns to hold up proceedings and so on. All right. Now, Alistair Campbell is the former communications director for Tony Blair. You know this. I would imagine your opinion of Alistair Campbell probably mirrors mine. Anyway, it's all been said before. He was on talk radio today and it got very heated. The host, Julia Hartley Brewer, got annoyed with the Labour man, Alistair Campbell, when he called Conservative MPs liars, saying that they lied during the referendum campaign. Hartley Brewer was like, I can see your liars and raise you some. What about Labour's liars like the co-sponsor of last night's bill, Yvette Cooper? This is Julie Hartley Brewer and Alistair Campbell.
You talked about liars in the Cabinet and how so many people told lies. How do you feel about Yvette Cooper? She's the one who secured that vote last night. She issued an election leaflet in 2017. Yvette Cooper MP, securing the best Brexit deal for the five towns. She wrote, I voted to trigger Article 50 in Parliament. I want to reform freedom of movement. I will not vote to block Brexit. So Yvette Cooper, Labour MP, she's a liar as well, isn't she? Isn't she? She's a liar. No, I will not vote to block Brexit. What did she do last night? She voted to block Brexit. Is she a liar or isn't she?
No, she didn't.
She's not a liar. So that's not a lie.
Now, wait a minute, Julie. Let me answer. What she did last night was recognise...
Was a lie.
No, wait a minute. It was recognise the scale of the mess that we are in.
No, 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 no. No, no, Alistair, you can't... Look, if you want to come on and criticise Tory MPs and ministers for being liars, that's absolutely fine. I think they've been lying as well. But you can't then, at the same time, not admit that one of your own MPs is a liar.
Well, she's not my MP.
You're a member of the Labour Party, aren't you? She's a Labour MP.
But listen, let me just say two things about this whole thing.
You're completely happy with Labour MPs doing that.
I'm not happy.
So she's a liar.
I am not happy. I'm not going to call Yvette Cooper a liar.
Even though she's lied to her constituents.
As bad as Campbell is, it's grandstanding and it's dreadful broadcasting by Brewer. We get you, love. You've said it enough times. Cooper is a liar. As bad as Campbell is, give him a chance to answer the question. You know, you've grandstanded, you've showed your listeners how important you are. Now shut up and let him answer.
Constituents.
She said something at the election that, given the circumstances at that time and the Labour Party policy at that time, which was rejected by the electorate, by the way, don't forget that, Labour's manifesto was rejected by the electorate. We are now in a completely different ballgame. And I think that those MPs who are big enough to stand up and say, I think we've got this wrong, I have respect for them.
Yeah, they're all liars. It doesn't matter which, I don't know, which side or corner of the House of Commons they dwell in. They're all liars. But listen, don't listen to Julia Hartley Brewer and Alistair Campbell and think to yourself, well, that's a hostile interview. They're all good pals, these people. Julia herself is in the club, because in the same interview, in the very same interview today, this happened.
I've just been on the phone to the leader of the last strong and stable government that Britain had, namely Tony Blair. I said to him, Tony, I'm going to have to go because I'm just about to do a radio interview. He said, who's that with? I said, Julia Hartley Brewer. And you know what he said? This is going to destroy your credibility, Julia. He said, she's the lever I like.
Well, I did do an event with Tony Blair some months ago, and we discovered that, as he said in his speech, we do have something in common because he's not allowed to go to Labour Party conference either.
How could you do an event with Tony Blair, the man responsible for killing millions of people and rendering millions more homeless? Based on a pack of lies. How could you do an event with him? They're all in the same club. The Westminster-based journalists, of which Hartley Brewer is one, the MPs, the Lords, they drink in the same bars, they eat in the same restaurants, their children go to the same schools. Got to understand that when you're analysing the national and commercial, as talk radio is commercial, media. I should know. I used to be Julia Hartley Brewer, or somebody very like her, way back in the day. So the police are warning people today, the public, you, me, activists and other politicians, to moderate even their language when talking about Brexit. They're worried that if the language continues in the current vein, where people are being very hostile, if we keep using terms like traitors and stuff, it's going to lead to violence. So we have to stop. By we, they mean other people, I suppose. Charlie Hall of the National Police Chiefs Council had this to say today. It's very brief, so listen up. Charlie Hall, National Police Chiefs Council.
We do think it is important that people who have that access to the public do understand the impact of what they're saying and what says. And it was particularly because what they say may give permission or be perceived as giving permission to other people. And it may be some people we know, the boundaries aren't quite the same as some of those people in public office.
See, I don't like this, and I don't suppose you like it either. You have to watch what you say, because it might lead to somebody else thinking that they've got permission to do something violent or to do something awful. That's dreadful. It's dreadful. It can't work like that. There are a lot of people who believe that MPs have committed treason. Now, whether they're right or wrong, you can debate that all day long. Should be a rapper, maybe. You can debate it forever, right? But you don't have a responsibility. If you're very passionate about something, and you think, for example, that an MP whose constituents, maybe 75% voted to leave, So we have MPs whose constituencies voted three quarters to leave, and those MPs have gone against that. So some of those constituents use words like treason, and they use words like enemy, or phrases even like enemies of the people. That's how strongly they feel. Doesn't mean that, given the opportunity, they are going to insult, to swear at, or even, God forbid, to assault their Member of Parliament. Vast majority of people won't do that. They'll vent their spleen and they will, you know, say what it is they want to say, and they will express their opinions, but they're not going to tend to violence. Violence is outrageous. Nobody should ever assault anybody. And it's very worrying when police chiefs and journalists are saying, well, maybe we should ban, or maybe we should stop using these terms. What other adjective, what other verbs exist whereby people can express what they feel about their MPs when the constituency voted leave or remain and the MP does the opposite? What's left for them? On the whole traitor thing, Adam Bolton on Sky News posed the question to government advisor Mo Hussein. This was this morning, and it's interesting, on traitors.
Do you think, you know, serious question really, should the word traitor be applied to anybody, any parliamentarian in this process, do you think?
Well, I mean, it's not really a question of whether or not it should be. You know, people in these papers are going to use their position often to kind of, you know...
Yeah, but the papers don't have to print it. They don't have to go down this road if they don't want to.
Well, I suppose, but, you know, it sells. And what are you going to do?
I think there is a responsibility on certainly on MPs, on public figures, on everyone to as you know, referring back to what the police were saying, to be mindful of the language that they use, not least because of the effect it could have on people who read it, and the sense that then it could be legitimised and taken maybe out of the context it was meant to fulfil. So I think there is a responsibility on that. But if people, you know, MPs do have a difficult job, they have their constituencies, they have their reasons, and I think words like that should not be thrown around.
Words like that shouldn't be thrown around. The government advisor, Mo Hussein, also said that those types of words and phrases can lead to maybe lesser sophisticated people taking the law into their own hands. But life cannot work like that. It's different when you're dealing with children, you know, very small children, young children. But when you're dealing with adults and you're having adult conversations, you can't walk around the world constantly self-censoring yourself, lest what you say be interpreted by somebody else as a license to go and commit acts of violence. It's ridiculous. Nobody agrees with members of parliament being abused on Twitter and called names and threatened with rape by cowards who hide behind pseudonyms. Nobody agrees with that. Nobody agrees with anybody getting assaulted. But you can't tell people that you're not to use terms like traitor and enemies of the state or enemies of the people if that's the way you feel. You know, these are weird times. By the way, the other voice there was Grace Blakely from the New Statesman. I didn't edit that out. Not that I wanted to edit it out, but I wanted to get the Mo Hussein bit there. It is 21 minutes past the hour. It is bucketing down here in South Manchester. We don't speak like that up here. We don't speak like this up here either. It's bucketing down, and that makes me feel very, very, very warm and snug in the studio. That's our weather. By the way, you're listening to The Richie Allen Show for Thursday. Not another programme like it around Europe. The most listened to independent radio show on the continent. Back in a minute. With a really important conversation. Adele Jarrett Kerr joins me. Don't miss that in two. Music from Stevie Wonder on The Richie Allen Show. It's coming up for 25 minutes past the hour. I'm going to say it again. It's piddling down here in Manchester. A lot of rain. A lot of rain today. Lots of interest in my first guest today. As usual, tweet the programme with your comments. We talked about this earlier in the week. It's a very important story. With everything, I suppose, focused on Brexit and the indicative votes and everything else, this kind of got lost, but it's a big story. The government is consulting on plans to launch a new register of children in England who are being educated at home. Apparently around 60,000 children are being educated at home. And I make no secret of the fact I like the idea a lot of homeschooling. Anyway, under this plan, the parents would be responsible to register their child if they were not attending a state school or a registered private school. Ministers are saying the reason for this is it would help councils to intervene when standards were poor or if children were at risk. But parents who homeschool are not happy. More on that in a minute. Education Secretary Damien Hines said the term home education had acquired a much broader meaning than it used to have and was now a catch-all phrase to refer to all children not in a registered school. And the BBC ran an interview with a lady called Rhianne Joy, who's in Suffolk, who home educates two of her children. She was apoplectic about it. She said, "Why should I have to sign a register and have someone come into my home and question the education I provide for my child when it's the first type of education that's succeeded for him? Will they have any knowledge of his background, of what he's gone through, the fact that he has no trust for people at all anymore?" And then she said, "If someone is coming to my home and questioning me about the education I'm providing, who is to say that if I do not agree with what they are suggesting or saying, who then governs that?" That's a very important point, I think, as well. There was a really thought-provoking piece in today's Daily Telegraph, written by my guest this hour, entitled "Why I Won't Let the State Interfere with Me Homeschooling My Children." It's an excellent article. Have a read of it. She's a journalist, a blogger. Her articles on homeschooling have appeared in the national press, and she's a home educator herself. So I'm delighted to welcome to the programme Adele Jarrett Kerr. And you can find Adele at beautifultribe.co.uk. Adele, thanks so much for taking the call. How are you?
Oh, hello, Richie. I'm okay. How are you?
I'm really well. Thanks so much for coming on. It's a hugely important issue, and it has gotten lost in the crazy news week or news year.
Well, there is so much happening.
So much going on. Right now, you heard, I'm sure you came across the comments by Rhianne Joy from Suffolk. Very strong comments. I guess you have a lot of sympathy with what she had to say.
Yeah, I was very pleased to see that the BBC decided to include that perspective.
Tell us, what some people will listen to this and they will say, what's wrong with this? The state knows that there are a lot of people homeschooling. It's maybe becoming more and more popular year on year. The state knows that at the moment, parents are not compelled to let the local authority know what's happening. Yeah. And the state has a responsibility to make sure children are okay. Why is the state wrong, and why are so many mums like yourself and dads worried about it?
Well, I think the thing is that a lot of us are not necessarily, well, a lot of people are against registration in general, but some of us are okay with the idea. It's just that we're concerned that it wouldn't be applied in a way that really works for our children, in a way that doesn't invade our privacy.
Explain that for me now. Why? How do you think? I'm going to make no secret. I should be objective here, but I sympathise. Yeah. I sympathise with your point of view. But being the devil's advocate, how will it invade privacy if somebody from the local authority wants to pop around, have a look at your children? You've got beautiful children, by the way. They're lovely.
Yeah, on the
Instagram pictures. Lovely children. Just have a look. All right, Adele. Everything looks fine. We'll see you in 6 months or whatever. What's wrong with that?
Well, the thing is that it's our home. So you're inviting somebody into, well, we're not inviting somebody. Somebody is coming into our private space and telling us whether our home is suitable or not. If we applied that to any other group, we would see the problem a lot more clearly. So preschoolers, we don't have anyone keeping track of where they are, and they may or may not be in nursery, especially in the 0 to 3 age group. But we assume that parents are keeping them safe. We trust parents to keep them safe. And we don't expect that they have to have somebody inspecting their home. The plans that are being discussed here are quite invasive. I mean, they're talking about potentially coming into your house and deciding whether your home is a suitable place for your child. It's not a school, it's your home.
Yeah, that kind of wound me up a bit as well when I saw that. What would give anybody the right, what criteria would you use to determine if the home is suitable?
Yeah. It's potentially quite discriminatory, because it may well people like me who have a relatively spacious home and perhaps a able to talk the talk and appear that we're able to put forward what our approach is in a way that makes sense to the person who's coming. You know, we might be okay, but what about people who maybe live in a smaller place and maybe are not that able to sort of defend what they're doing in a way that the person who's coming will understand? I think the concern is that the person who's going to come in will not necessarily take a holistic approach, that they won't necessarily understand, as Rianne said, where we're coming from, and the journey that our children have been on, the experiences that they may have had in school, and perhaps the additional needs that they have in some cases.
That's important too. That's a very important point, because with homeschooling parents, as I've followed this issue over the last 2 or 3 years, I found out that, you see, when you know nothing about anything, you form opinions based on nothing, and you're generally wrong all the time. Mm-hmm. I imagined that homeschooled children were parents who didn't want to send their children to school and decided to do it themselves. I thought that was pretty much the norm, but of course I was wrong. There are many people whose children did go to a school, yes, had a bad experience, and, you know, maybe didn't get anywhere with dealing with the school, and decided then to take the child out, which was the case with Rianne, yes, Joy. So that's important, that.
Yes, and it's possible that 60,000 figure that they're using, it's possible that the majority of those children are children who went to school and were deregistered.
Yeah, that's right.
Obviously, they don't really know what the real figures are, because so many are not registered.
A lot of our listeners today, and we're an independent radio show, so sure, we talk about things that maybe you don't always hear on national and commercial media. We kind of stretch things out a bit. We give more time to subjects. Some of our listeners got in touch today and said, Richie, it looks like the government and local authorities are being benevolent here. It looks like they want to do the right thing, but...
Yeah.
Some of our listeners are saying, I don't go along with that. I think this is kind of creepy, and it's a bit Big Brother-esque, a bit, you know, yeah, maybe a bit Orwellian. What do you think, Adele?
Well, I actually see both of those perspectives. I do think that people are well-intentioned, but I just don't see that what they want to happen is going to necessarily happen. So we're talking about intervention in cases where intervention is needed. Bear in mind that this is a small number of cases where intervention is needed, but say that there are real cases of neglect. Would it really help to introduce this registration and monitoring? Those who are already evading the system will continue to evade the system. So it really only affects people, well, the rest of us who have chosen to home educate and who are doing it quite well.
Yeah. Loads of questions on this coming in. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Delighted to be joined this hour by Adele Jarrett Kerr. Go to beautifultribe.co.uk. And Adele writes a blog as well. I'll put links out to that. She's written a terrific piece, several pieces in the last few years for various newspapers in The Telegraph about this. What are your... First of all, Adele, if I can ask, why... It was really interesting reading your article today. Your husband went to a boarding school. You didn't.
Yeah.
You grew up in Trinidad, and you, yeah, had a different experience of schooling. Why did you decide from the get-go that homeschooling was for you?
Well, I was actually really fortunate that I knew home-educated children when I was growing up, and I was really envious of them. I was envious of the fact that they could finish their work in a certain amount of time, and then they had time to pursue the things that they wanted to pursue. And they were very creative, engaging people. Even as a peer, I could see that. And I wanted that for that opportunity for my children. Also, as I said in the piece, I didn't get on with school myself, yeah, particularly. Academically, I did really well, but socially and emotionally, I struggled. And so maybe that gave me pause when it came time to thinking about my own children.
And you thought about that and you did it. Is it, these might be very kind of, they might be very silly questions or ordinary questions for you.
No, they're boring, no silly questions.
No, but you know, I know you've been asked these things a million times. How difficult is it to do? I mean, how do you set your day out, Adele, when it comes to, you know, to teaching your own children? How does it work from your perspective, as opposed to how it works in school? They go in, they sit down, they have their assembly, they start their lessons, and they're there till 3 o'clock or whatever. How does it work for you?
Well, I'll just say that we are a diverse group as home educators. So there are many, many different educational approaches. So my approach is just one of many. But the way that we do it is I have some ideas of what we could do in the day, and I discuss them with my children, and we have a very democratic approach to things. If they don't want to do something, then we discuss it a bit more. And often they do come around to it. But if they really don't want to do it, then they often find their own projects, which actually is quite as educational.
Very interesting that. There'll be parents listening to this now, Adele. They'll be screaming at you. What do you mean it's democratic? What do you mean it's democratic? There has to be a boss. There has to be someone in charge.
Part of the reason why I decided not to send my children to school, because actually I felt that that they shouldn't have someone else dictating what they do with their time.
Yeah, it's brilliant that. I reflected briefly on my primary school education on yesterday's programme. I went to a national school in Waterford City in Ireland when I was 1979 until 1986, I think. The experience was brilliant, Adele, but I'm well aware, having worked in national media and commercial media for years, I've gone to many schools on assignments for radio stations and stuff. My wonderful experience of primary school, which involved a lot of theatre and arts and crafts and rolling around in the mud and chasing one another, as well as learning to do basic maths and to read and to write, there was an awful lot of free time and, you know, child time. And I look back on that with great fondness, but I'm well aware that over the years, that's kind of disappeared. It's not what primary school used to be. And I'm listening to you, and I'm,
And the changes that people are concerned about, people like you raise about primary schools, cutting arts programs and cutting time playing and becoming more, we're moving more to learning by rote and actually learning a lot of, well, raising the standards to unreachable level. A lot of that is a lot more reminiscent of the schooling that I had.
Yeah.
So when I hear people say that, I say, well, that sounds familiar. And I know that it didn't wash well with me.
And standard, I've been stonking you on the internet all day today. If you felt there was a presence around you today, it was me, Adele.
It
was me, because I was reading stuff that you've been writing for years, and you wrote an excellent piece again in the Telegraph a couple of years ago, and you explained and you talked about standardised testing. Why is that such a no-no for children? All these testing, you know, constant tests and exams. Why is it a problem?
Well, we're all different. We're all different, so we don't reach the same places at the same time. We don't have the same interests, and that's okay, because as adults, that's the way that it is. So there's no need for standardized testing, and it can be quite stressful for a lot of children and not necessarily take them where they need to go. Something that an image that gets passed around by home educators quite a lot is the idea that why are you trying to teach a fish to climb a tree?
Right. Well, this is interesting. I've heard it said before by former teachers that the testing process basically works on memory, and schools are under so much pressure from Ofsted to do well and to get good gradings that learning and, you know, genuine, real deep learning kind of goes out the window. Adele Jarrett-Kerr is our guest. I know you've got loads of questions for her, lots of questions coming in on Twitter. Somebody has pointed out to me and said, what if the government was to say, right, Adele, here's the plan. How about once every 6 months, we get you and your gorgeous children to come to an assessment centre and we'll see what sort of standard their reading, writing and arithmetic is twice a year? What would you say to that?
I would say no.
Why?
I actually think that my children would do quite well with that, because certainly my eldest, she kind of likes tests and she is reading to a very high standard, and numeracy is quite high as well. But I don't see the reason that they should be subjected to that kind of stress unless it's something that they wanted to do. I believe that they should get to choose what they want to do. And also, I think I would reject that, because there are a lot of people for whom that wouldn't work, because a lot of people believe that children should start learning to read and write and do mathematics and all of that a lot later.
Yeah.
And although I feel that I would pass, because something that I've been told quite a bit today is that, well, it's okay for you, you're doing it well. What about the people who are not doing it like that? Well, actually, I feel that it's important for me to hold the space for all home educators. And we all have different views on when things should happen and how things should happen. And I believe that is a parent's right to choose and a child's right to have an education that suits their needs.
Listen, I'm with you all day long. I'm supposed to be arguing with you here, Adele, but I can't do it. But I can't, because it's something we kind of are planning to do. My partner and I, we're a little bit older than we had hoped before having children, but yeah, we'll adopt the responsibility ourselves. Now, before I ask you my next question, I've got to say this. I am not religious at all. I was raised Roman Catholic, obviously, coming from Ireland. My politics, well, I'm an old socialist, shamelessly, an old champagne socialist. Yeah. And I don't believe I, you know, have any, I don't have a prejudicial bone in my body about anything or anybody or any religion, any gender, anything. I want to ask you this. I'm concerned that a new programme of education to be introduced to primary school, to get children thinking even younger than before about the biology of sex, but also about the various relationships, straight, gay, whatever. I don't like that at all, Adele. And I'm old-fashioned. I think it's something for the parents. I don't believe it should be taught to very young children. Now, feel free to argue with me, because I know...
Well, I personally don't have a problem, just because, I speak quite freely to my children about all of that. My children could probably give some adults some sex education, to be honest.
Right.
But I can see how some people might feel uncomfortable with that. I just think that there isn't a need to wait on those things in general.
Well, good. We found something to disagree on then. I'll tell you why I'm against it, for want of a better way of putting it.
Sure.
I love what you're doing with your children. And there's a friend of mine living in Bury, Aaron Calland. Aaron used to be involved with the programme. Really good guy. Aaron and his wife Vicky are homeschooling their children as well. And when I went up to Bury to meet Aaron a couple of years ago, the first time I saw this in action, I was amazed. I was spellbound. And the children were bright and breezy and curious and, you know, interacting with everything, just as you described yourself.
They were typical home ed kids.
Right, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Can't we just allow them be children? Why introduce the notion of, you know, gender identity, which is bizarre. I can't figure it out. I'm 44 years of age. Why can't we leave it to... I mean, you talked very eloquently about, you know, your children setting the agenda. Well, in that case then, why don't we leave that sort of stuff off the agenda until they broach the subjects themselves? That's my argument.
Well, what age do you think the children broach that subject?
Really good question. I don't have an answer. I can only remember myself being... Right, I'm going to be honest here. Probably 9, 10, 11 years old, when there was always an older kid who had an old magazine or, you know, a very old video.
Yeah.
And we watched it embarrassed and we laughed and we giggled and stuff like that. It just wasn't anything that would have ever come up when we were, you know, primary school, 4, 5, 6, 7. It wouldn't have done.
I think that you had a very different experience to what I had, because certainly it was being talked about when I was at primary school when I was 5.
Was it? By teachers, was it?
No, by children, by other children. And you can imagine the misinformation that was shared.
Yeah.
And the teachers just didn't speak about it. So, you know, it wasn't... And I think for many people, that is the experience. They get a lot of information from their peers of whatever age, and they don't hear anything from an adult, whether it's a parent or a teacher.
That's what I can't argue with. You've made a good point there. And like I'm saying, 9, 10, one of the boys had a video. Yeah, look, I'll concede on the playground when I was a bit younger, there were things being said, you know, children are curious. There were things being said about sex that were totally wrong and totally misinformed. Fair enough, but that never did any harm to any of us. You know, not knowing, you know, having those stupid misconceptions.
Great, actually, I would disagree, because I think that there are a lot of people who have, certainly a lot of women who have suffered from people having a very low view of sex and maybe a lot of misinformation. So I think the sooner we can talk about sex and relationships, the better for all of us. And actually, you were saying, when do children ask these questions? Well, you know, a 2-year-old can ask about where baby comes from. You know, a very articulate 2-year-old. And certainly my children want to know all about periods. And that, you know, that is a part of the whole sex education thing. You mentioned about gender identity, but... a lot of children, certainly for the children who themselves recognise that there is body dysmorphia, some sort of gender dysphoria or something going on for them, or certainly just realise that there's something different. Like for them, it is good to hear about this from very early on. And actually, my children have friends who have parents who have relationships that are not heteronormative or are not necessarily cisgender. So it's very helpful for them to hear about it so that they can make sense of the adults who they know.
But your children will come to you, and it's a lovely thing. You know, I mean, I was asked by a gay friend of mine, and he said, Richie, if you and Caroline have a little lad or a little girl, and someday you're in town and there's a couple of gentlemen holding hands, and the child says, what's going on there, Daddy? Well, I would say, well, great, look, you've asked me. Those two guys are together. Why are they holding hands? Because they love one another. They're together. And leave it at that.
Yeah.
Right now, I love the idea of the child asking the parent. I can't bear the idea of schools introducing stuff to children, saying, look, this is what's going on in society. And, you know, you can't question this, and you can't. And look, nobody should question same-sex relationships. That's ridiculous. We moved on from that dozens and dozens of years ago.
Well, but
we should hope so. But I don't want the state saying to kids, this is what you got to think. And by the way, did you know that there are 67 different genders on Facebook and stuff like that? I'd rather the child came to Adele and your husband and said, Mom, what's going on? I don't want the state doing it. It's creepy to me, Adele.
Anyway. Well, I think sadly that if children are spending quite a lot of their time in schools, maybe there isn't that much time for those kinds of conversations to emerge.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe that's yet another reason for home educating. Although I have to say that everything that is on those kinds of things being on the agenda at school are no problem for me, and they're absolutely not the reason why I'm personally.
Oh no, I know. Listen, let's make that perfectly clear. Make that perfectly clear. Of course, no.
I'm very pro children learning all about that stuff.
And I'm glad that you disagreed with me.
In an age appropriate way, and I don't know very much about what the national curriculum lays out for that, so I can't comment.
Yeah, we might have a look at that in a year or so when stuff is published. We might have a look at it. We might come back to it. But no, it's good that you've disagreed with me. I absolutely respect your point of view, but it would be an issue for me as a dad. Not because I don't want not because I want a conservative Christian right wing lunatic child who not because of that, but because I'd rather have the conversation. Anyway, we'll leave that there in the few minutes we have left. And thanks for coming on, by the way. Brilliant conversation. Adele Jarrett Kerr is with us. I'd love somebody objectively to do a survey. Now, you're probably going to tell me it's already been done, because I suspect that children who have the experience that your children are having will be more rounded, more balanced, more healthy, and more successful, dare I say. And success doesn't mean money, but they will be better off in their adult years. I really do believe that. Has anybody attempted to study this at all?
Yes, there was a survey done, not in this country, but in America. There was a survey done. I believe it was published in either The Economist or Time. It might have been The Economist, but they surveyed unschooling children who were now adults, and they all reflected on their childhoods and said that they were happy that they had been unschooled, and they'd gone on, many of them, to start their own businesses or to enter creative industries.
That's lovely, isn't it? Because you get asked all the time, oh, they're at home, they're not mingling with children. But that's a nonsense as well, isn't it?
No, absolutely not. My children are with people all the time. I sometimes need to say, actually, we need some time at home.
Yeah, good stuff, Adele. I want to thank you for coming on. Final question, final word to you. If they persist with this, the government, which it looks like they will, how far will you go? I mean, you're a bit of a celebrity. You're known in this field as a voice of authority.
Hardly, but I'm glad to be a voice.
No, you are. Look, I know you're not looking for any celebrity, but you're known as a go-to person, a home educator. You're very eloquent. You're a very good writer. So what will you do in the event that they say, sorry, Adele, you're going to have to register the children?
Well, if it becomes law, then yes, I will register my children. But I will be fighting it until it does become law. And I definitely want to have a conversation around what it's going to look like if it does go through.
We'll watch it closely. It's hugely important. Got lost a bit this week, sadly, because of all the Brexit nonsense. But I want to just remind our listeners, go to beautifultribe.co.uk. There is only one Adele Jarrett Kerr on Twitter. You can follow Adele there. She's a home educator, a freelance journalist, a feminist, and her articles are excellent. They're very, very interesting. If you're thinking of home educating, if you've just begun to pursue that idea, check Adele out. Adele, have a brilliant weekend. I hope your child is better, by the way. I know you've had a bit of car sickness today.
Yes,
the joys of parenting. I've got it all to look forward
to. Absolutely.
Well, look after yourself, and thanks for coming on.
Yes, thank you for inviting me.
Cheers, Adele. That was Adele Jarrett-Kerr live on the line from her home. She's based around Cornwall, Adele, and she wrote that excellent piece in The Telegraph today saying that she will not let the state interfere in how she home educates her children. Hugely important, this, you know, because there are those of us who, me included, who are very suspicious about where this sort of interference leads. In some cases, it'll lead to requests for intervention, requests maybe for social worker intervention and family courts and stuff like this, and it's all pretty dreadful, or it can be in some cases. Maybe not in the majority of cases, but there you are. It's it's 8.5 minutes to the top of the hour, 9.5 minutes to the top of the hour. Loads of comments on this. Poll tweets, this can be taken too far, Richie. If children ask questions, you should allude to the answers truthfully, but move on quickly. Let them be children. That's my philosophy. What is important is for them to be taught that they should be respectful and to be kind to everyone, says Paul there. Yeah, absolutely right. Quite a few of you have been commenting on the sex education thing. Sex education for me properly in terms of schooling began when I was in my fourth year of high school or secondary school. That's when I began to hear about the biology of sex, the anatomy of sex in my biology class. And we were given the scientific explanation of what happens when a man and a woman come together and make a baby. And that was the first time it was kind of taught to me in a formal way. And that's what I would advocate if I was given the, you know, if I was running the rule over this type of thing. I would say, let children be children. If they've got a question, let their parents deal with it. And when they get to even sixth form, you could say 11 years of age, then if you want to teach them the mechanics of it, sounds very awful, doesn't it? The mechanics, do it. But I wouldn't want any man or woman speaking to my 4 or 5 year old child about sex, about relationships, heterosexual or otherwise, or about gender identity. I wouldn't stand for it. And I don't have a religious bone in my body. I'm not religious. I'm not Christian. I'm not a far right evangelical type. And those people are human beings as well. They've got their opinions. I just don't want, leave children alone, you know. It sounds like Adele's children have a wonderful experience, you know, and I'm sure they are. I mentioned Aaron before and one or two other people I've met. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. But as for the gender identity stuff, just leave them alone, you know. They have enough to be thinking about. You know, right, what time are we? It's coming up for 7 minutes to the top of the hour. Now, Max Egan spoke with me earlier on from Brisbane in Australia, I do believe. Hope I got that right. I should know, I've been speaking to Max for many years. Fascinating conversation. Fast-moving conversation about many things, but specifically about the onset or the, I don't know, this reality we're entering where people's social media accounts are being closed down because they are talking about certain things. And in his case, talking about the Christchurch mosque shootings. Dreadful business, of course, 3 weeks ago, 50 people killed. Horrendous, many more people injured. Now, Max is absolutely outraged because on his channel, he was asking questions about the shooter, about his background. And Max was pointing out that in a series of videos that have been deleted but are still available online, it can or it could be argued that there is a real need to investigate those videos for the reason that this guy might have had some help. That's what Max was saying. But videos were deleted, his channel was put, restrictions were put on his channel, and he was outraged because there are people in the so-called independent media who are not only saying that this was a hoax, which is very silly in my opinion, but they're also contacting the bereaved family members on social media and calling them liars. These people are sick, I would have said, and I'm not virtue signaling, I'm not grandstanding, they're sick. And Max Egan talks to me, and you'll hear this conversation in a minute, about where are these people coming from? And are these people either knowingly or unknowingly being used to destroy credible researchers, whether it's Max Egan or somebody else. It's a very interesting conversation. We'll get into it. David tweets, you don't make a three-week-old baby ride a bike. I think whenever they start paying a real interest in the sex they desire is time enough, says David there. Thanks for that, David. Huberta said, didn't take long for esoteric anti-government to block me. I thought we were debating, he says. I don't know what that's about, mate. What is that about? I have no idea. Hi to Gail, by the way, and to everybody else tweeting. Hi to Steve and James. How you doing, Steve? Right, let's introduce Max Egan then. Max made a video. Max is an expert in video production, by the way. He's not a self-proclaimed expert in video production. He's an expert in it. He's a brilliant video editor. I know this because I worked with Max at TPV Television in London. Max wasn't in London, he was in Australia, but I got to know him. And he's brilliant. He's like my great friend and colleague Hayden Hewitt. Max has got all the experience. He's terrific with graphics, with building videos, making, editing, all of that. Great guy, Max. Multi-talented fella. So he took the video made by the shooter Brenton Tarrant and he had a look at it and he was disturbed by what he found in it. And the video was seen by a lot of people. Some of our listeners were asking me what did I think of it. I watched it and I concluded that Max had a good point, that you could make a case, at least, that there needs to be further investigation, that this man, who will be in court again tomorrow, that this man had help in murdering 50 people. That's all. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not insulting or hurting the bereaved. The media has a responsibility to press the police and the authorities to find out what really happened. The media doesn't do it. It just repeats stereotypes and regurgitates things from other networks, and there is no genuine investigation. In the absence of that, Max did an investigation and Google have come down very heavy on him. So, I spoke with him earlier today. Don't be tweeting me questions for Max because this was recorded. Spoke to him earlier today and asked him about the video and about what is happening to his YouTube channel, Max Egan on The Richie Allen Show.
Yeah, well, they didn't even send me any notification that they were going to limit my channel or anything like that. I just went to upload a video and I got told that I couldn't. Well, I went there and I just, as soon as I clicked onto YouTube, I got told that I'd breached community guidelines. I went to my channel and I noticed the video that I had just uploaded had been deleted. And this video, like, I uploaded something last week and I thought, I've already got a strike against my channel. This is a little bit risque. They're going to give me a second strike if I leave this video here. So I've already uploaded it to YouTube, which means it's on BitChute. So I deleted it, and then I uploaded a 1 minute and 40-second dialogue of just me talking with a yin-yang sign going around, informing people that I'd moved the video to BitChute. And YouTube deleted that video as having inappropriate content and put a strike against my channel. There's a one minute, 40-second video with a yin-yang sign on it. So now I'm not able to upload to my channel. And what it's all about is the reporting on Christchurch. I mean, it's happening to everybody who's reporting on Christchurch. It doesn't matter which way you're going, they're deleting your video. Anything that is not supporting the official narrative, they're deleting the video. And there's a lot of disinformation being spread about this, and I'm really trying to clear it up because this whole CGI concept and this whole concept that it's all fake is being spread deliberately, and it's damage control because of what the video actually shows.
Right.
You know, people have got everyone focusing on the shell casings are disappearing. It's bandwidth. I mean, it's just video compression. Everything that they've said is fake. I've gone through and I've looked at it frame by frame. I've gone through there's 20,319 frames in this video. I've gone through the whole thing frame by frame. It's not CGI. It's not fake. But what they want you concentrating on all this stuff that you'll argue back and forth about. Oh, why were the bodies in the corner? Why wasn't there enough blood? Why was it this? Why was it that? All this stuff that you argue back and forth about, but you're not looking at five really distinct points or four really distinct points that are revealed by this video. Number one, there's a man in red there at the driveway when he enters. Number two, that man in red can be clearly seen again around about frame 14,000. 1,242, when he's firing at the woman out on the street. You can see that man in red again, standing by the wall. He's clearly there. He's clearly part of the operation. And the part that there is a car parked in the driveway in next to the door of the mosque. When he enters, it's there while he shoots all the people in the mosque. Then he comes out to shoot someone outside, and the car drives away while he's shooting that person.
Yeah.
So there's people there that are accompanying him. And also, when he was inside, he came out to shoot three people at the perimeter. Every time he did that, he dropped everything, ran out the front to shoot a guy at the front, and then he was getting a can of gasoline out of his car. He dropped that and ran to the other entrance to shoot someone out the back, and then when he was inside again, he dropped everything he was doing and ran to the front to take a shot at two women who were escaping. So someone must have alerted him to the fact that there were three people escaping from the perimeter at three different points that he could not have line of sight to. So there's all this sorts of evidence to show that this was a planned event. There were multiple people there playing at this event. Whether there was more than one shooter, I don't know. But at that mosque, in Al Noor Mosque, there was definitely more than one player at that event. And even when you look at the timeline of this whole event, it's physically impossible for this shooter, because 33 minutes from the first shot was fired at Al Noor Mosque to when he was arrested, when the police rammed his car, it's physically impossible to have carried out a six-minute attack at Al Noor Mosque, then to have driven to Linwood Mosque, carried out an attack there, been chased away by attackers, and then driven to where he was rammed by police in 33 minutes. It's not physically possible.
Well, you're asking those questions. I'm going to be the devil's advocate now, and I'm going to say, first of all, I stand by what I said. The videos you made, I should have been in touch with you by now. I had planned on being in touch with you because I would be, number one, and number two, listeners were asking me to get you back on the program. You've got in touch with me first, thankfully. So I am going to be the devil's advocate. I'm going to say that you've got a very strong case to suggest that the timeline is very difficult to achieve. But I'm going to be the devil's advocate and say we don't know that it's impossible because it would have to be reconstructed. However, your videos are ethically sound as a journalistic exercise because you're asking the question. And it is anomalous and it is concerning to me that we see this guy in the red jacket and we see the movements of the car. I don't like it. Now, I'm glad that you cleared up at the beginning that these things about the shell casings disappear and the whole thing was a hoax, because this drives me mad, because it gives ammunition to the people who work at Google in Silicon Valley and in Ireland, funnily enough. It gives them ammunition to say, oh, truthers are just scumbags. All they want to do is insult and hurt the bereaved. And you're not doing that. God love the families of the people that were murdered. God love them. It must be horrendous to be coming to terms with that. You're not doing that. You're actually doing what Sky News should be bloody doing, which is working on behalf of the families. Because if there were other people involved, Max, and I'm sorry for getting excited here, they deserve to bloody know, right? They deserve to know.
Exactly.
That.
Exactly, they do. And the thing is, you know, people don't see how we're being played. This has been long in the making, Richie. This has been long planned. If you go and look at the profile that they've set up for this guy on 8chan, this has really, really been set up for a while. And you've got to understand how they've done it with the whole fake news meme. You know, all they had to do was fake a couple of events, like Sandy Hook or whatever. Just fake a couple of events, and now everybody calls everything fake. And you look at the setup, what they did with Pizzagate. I told people not to focus on the pizza store. It's going to turn pear-shaped. They're going to use it against us, and they did. The very next day after I said that, they get this whole fake news meme going. So now they're going to use this event in Christchurch. If they can get enough people to run with this concept that it's all fake and it's CGI shell casings and all this stuff, if they get enough of the truth community to run with this, they're going to be able to shut down the entire independent media for spreading fake news. That's what it's about. You know, they've done this and they've created such a worldwide outpouring of grief for these people. And now what's the response of the independent media? Oh, it's all fake. It's all hoax. They're all crisis actors, all this stuff. So, you know, and now with what you see happening to YouTube and the severe censoring you're getting for even suggesting that it's not the official line, I'm getting people attacking me, and the trolls that I'm getting are unbelievable because I'm not supporting the concept that it's fake.
Yeah, but there is a
no
problem.
Bodies and no victims.
There is a problem, and it's not your fault. You see, this is the thing, and I had this out with Jim Fetzer, had it out with Wolfgang Halbig as well. You know, I don't do the devil's advocate thing to virtue signal. I do it because it's the right thing to do as a proper presenter. But these guys asking questions. Sadly, within the independent media, there are lousy bastards who contact the people. I know that some of the Muslims who have lost family members at one of these mosques, I know that they have been contacted by people, personally, directly contacted, being told that you're a bunch of liars and all this fake grief and you're crisis actors. That must be dreadful for them. You can't and should never be blamed for that. Neither should any other credible researcher and journalist. But this is what Google and this is what the mainstream media does now. They put it all into one big basket and they say, oh, this is harmful, it's hurtful, so it's all got to be deleted. When in fact, and I have to repeat this again, you and one or two others are saying, the families coming to terms with this stuff deserve better than the garbage served up by the mainstream media. They need to mourn their dead. They need to put them to rest. They need to console one another. But then they need to know the truth. Was this guy helped? What is the backstory of this guy? Why was he in Turkey? Why was he in Pakistan? How did he get to North Korea? All of this stuff. And that's all you're saying, my friend.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he did. But also, I mean, you know, the speed that they've rolled through gun control in New Zealand, like they've just blitzed it through 10 days. They had the legislation ready within minutes of this shooting, and in 10 days it's all through. And now they're going through. There's like 250,000 people who got fired, member of this gun club in New Zealand, and these people are just no notification at all. They've got no leg to stand on. There's police showing up at their houses at 2 o'clock in the morning to confiscate their firearms straight away. After
is that happening?
Event.
That's definitely happening, is it, Max?
That's happening. That's happening right now in New Zealand. It's they're just blitzing to take all the guns from the people. And this was a planned event. I mean, what I'm saying is people need to look at this because this has been staged to bring about a certain outcome. And it wasn't a lone shooter. It was not what the government is saying that it was. That's clearly evidenced by the video. And all of this conjecture about shell casings and CGI and fake and all this stuff,
this is all detracting
from the fact that this video gives us clear evidence that there was multiple shooters and that the Ardern government is lying through their teeth and disarming the people of New Zealand under false pretenses. This is very important stuff. And we as independent journalists and as an independent media have a real opportunity here to expose the truth about this, but you can't get through the smoke and noise and you can't try to even get anybody to look at it because as soon as you suggest it, everyone goes, oh, you're not saying it's fake, so you're supporting the government.
Oh,
telling me that I'm shilling for the New Zealand government because
madness.
I'm claiming there were victims.
Madness. Okay. I've had the same thing. Look, I have all the time in the world for Wolfgang and others, but I'm not entirely convinced that children didn't die at Sandy Hook. That doesn't mean I'm right. What the hell do I know? I'm just a bloke who makes a programme in Manchester in England. There are a million things wrong with the Sandy Hook story, but I'm not immune to the idea that some children might have been killed. And I'll go along with that. But again, you get the lunatic saying, oh, well, you're covering up. You're covering up. No, you're not. I'm going to say this, Max. God forbid that I ever lose a relative, a loved one or a friend in a terrorist attack or a shooting event. God forbid. If it ever happened, I wouldn't want to switch on Sky News and see virtue signalling politicians and journalists saying slogans like, they'll never defeat us, they will never kill all of our values, they hate us for what we stand for. I would go through the television. As a victim, I would say, stop with the cliche mongering and the virtue signalling, find out what happened and why. And the mainstream media has done nothing to find out what has happened. It is ludicrous that the Prime Minister of New Zealand could say, let's never mention Brenton Tarrant's name again. Why not? Why, in case people start looking into the man and to who he is and who he was and what he did? For me, it's one of the greatest, the most obvious media cover-ups I've ever seen. Forget about the deep state and the politicians and all the rest of it. But the media behaviour, Max, it's sickening.
Oh,
it's the worst I've ever seen.
It's unprecedented, and the censorship. I mean, 10 to 14 years jail if you even watch the video or share the video if you say anything but negative stuff about the video if you're in New Zealand. This is what it's about. And people don't realise this is going to be used to shut down the independent media. If they can get this CGI, it's all fake meme to take, which, like you say, people are ringing up and abusing the victims' families already.
Horrendous.
This will sell it to the people. And they'll just think we're a bunch of right-wing extremists who encourage Brendan Tarrant to do this. Because if you look at his manifesto, which I guarantee he didn't write, you know, it looks like it reads as a truth manual, only it's peppered with extremist rhetoric through it. So it makes all of us look like we are right-wing extremists who all want to take up arms against the government. That's what it makes us look like. And that's people selling this whole fake CGI thing. This is what they're selling. And this is going to introduce mandatory censorship. You're going to need to have retinal IDs and scans to even access the internet. You're going to need this to even go shopping. You're going to need this to do anything. That's what they're going to do. It's going to bring in blanket censorship, mandatory IDs right around the world if people don't pay attention to this. And the truth community is getting absolutely played on this. And look at it in New Zealand now as an example. What they've done in response to this is Jacinda Ardern has set up a emergency hotline. This is, of course, after the emergency has happened. They've got an emergency hotline so people can ring up and report anything suspicious. And we have one independent media personality in New Zealand. That's Vinnie Eastwood, the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Vinnie has had so many people ring up and report him as possibly being a right-wing extremist who's reporting fake news and saying that this is all fake and it's a hoax, which he isn't.
No, he isn't, to be fair. He's not.
And he's had the police visit his house 4 times in 4 days.
Wow.
Okay, wake him up at 9, 10 o'clock at night, get him out of bed. And, you know, this is what's going on now. And this is coming to a town near you if we can't knock this whole fake CGI rumor that's being spread and knock it on the head and expose the COINTEL operatives for what they are. Because all of this reporting, I mean, I've gone through this video frame by frame. Anybody who is reporting that the shell casings are CGI and they're disappearing is selling you an outright lie. This isn't misinvestigation. This isn't misinterpretation. This isn't not seeing things properly. This is an outright lie which is being spread to poison the well. And I would suggest that every report that has come from the website Veterans Today, through these reports, that website and every main contributor to that website has fully exposed themselves as being a counterintelligence operation. And I have no problem putting that out there and naming that for what it is. They have poisoned the well on this, and it's going to have incredible repercussions to the independent media and everybody around the world. People do not realize the significance and the ramifications of what is happening with this Christchurch event.
Yeah, let me just... Again, not being devil's advocate, we know several writers for Veterans Today who write some very good stuff, but I'm going to endorse what you said about some of the stuff that comes from Veterans Today. It's beyond garbage, and it is. And I've actually said to one or two of those whom I know who write for Veterans Today, why do you put up with it? And they've said, well, Richie, don't be a hypocrite. You've often complained about being found guilty by association. Don't do it to me. I write my articles. They put them out there. I'm happy enough with that. And I've said, okay, fair enough. You won't be aware, Max, but we've had this programme has been named by every Sunday newspaper in this country in the last few weeks as being a kind of a haven for anti-Semites, which it isn't, of course. It's nonsense. Go back to what you said about Vinnie Eastwood. I looked very closely at what Vinnie was saying, and it's what you've said is fair. It seems like he's being misrepresented by so-called concerned citizens. He isn't saying that the thing never happened, as far as I can see. He's saying people were murdered and yet there's no investigation. Was it possibly a false flag? Which again, maybe people who never hear the independent media, maybe people who never hear Max Egan or anybody else, maybe they've come to understand the term false flag as if it's never happened, when that's nonsense. False flag means, as I understand it, from speaking to researchers like you for years and years, is when party A commits the crime and makes it look like party B did it, right? That's a false flag. That's not a hoax. Something very bad has happened, but the signs are that it was all one man in this case, when in fact it might not have been. That's what a false flag is, right?
Exactly. You know, they're saying this was a lone wolf. This was a lone wolf, extremist, white supremacist extremist from Grafton. It wasn't. It was multiple players. It was a well-organized event, and there were multiple players who were guiding this guy and helping this guy. All the reports from Lynwood Mosque say there were multiple shooters, and it can't have been Brendan Tarrant who they chased off because he couldn't have possibly got there in time. You know, and also, I mean, the phone calls. Lynwood Mosque called the police station 2 minutes after Al Noor Mosque called the police station. It's a 7-minute drive. So, you know, how did this work out? You know, so nothing adds up. You know, nothing about the official story adds up. And that's what's important in this. And we've got to get rid of the smoke and noise. We've got to get rid of the smoke and mirrors. And we've got to see, you know, that these people who plan these things think 6 or 7 steps ahead. They really do. And the whole Sandy Hook fake news meme that was created and the whole Pizzagate fake news thing, this is all snowballed into what we now see in Christchurch, which is going to be used against us. And, you know, the amount of penalties that I've got to my channel just for even suggesting this, for even suggesting that it's not fake and that people actually died and that there's a co-intel narrative which is actually trying to control the narrative and that it's all going to come back on us and it's going to close down the independent media. Look at it. This is how it's going to be played.
Let me remind our listeners,
it's
Max.
Perfectly obvious.
Let me remind our listeners that joining the program, Max Egan is with me. Obviously, we recorded this a bit earlier on. Max has been researching and writing and travelling around the world talking about the news and geopolitics and giving people an alternative viewpoint, giving them another look at events. He's a pacifist, is Max. I've known him many years now. He's not got a dangerous or an aggressive or an angry, well, angry maybe against the establishment from time to time, but he's a completely decent and completely ethical researcher, not a hateful bone in his body. He's been asking questions in videos that he's made about the Christchurch shooting, which happened a few weeks ago now, three weeks ago tomorrow it might be, and the questions are valid and the presentation that he made and put on YouTube is valid, and it asks some very disturbing questions that should have been asked by the press, not only in New Zealand but around the world. He's found out in the last 24 hours that because he's been asking these questions, he's not going to be allowed to upload to his channel for 90 days. Now, a lot of researchers, some on the far right, okay, fair enough, I've always said it doesn't matter what somebody is saying, they should have the right to say it, are being closed down by YouTube. The terrible thing about this is, I remember last year, the Richie Allen Show YouTube channel, now this is not about me, and I certainly don't want to make it about me, was deleted over the interview with Wolfgang Halbig. What was disturbing about that more than anything for me was that the interview was sound as a journalistic enterprise. I basically hammered Wolfgang Halbig. This is the interview was actually 2 years before the channel got deleted, ironically. And I gave it to him between the eyes, you know, but gave him plenty of time to answer. It wasn't a hatchet job. And afterwards he said, oh, you gave it to me hard there, he said. But fair enough, he said, you know, you gave me plenty of time. So what you're saying, the reason I mentioned my channel is because what you're saying is very important. It seems that the powers that be want to delete, full stop, any discussion about what happened in Christchurch. It doesn't matter what you're saying, because they fear that any discussion of it, even from Max's point of view, which is loads of people were killed, horrendous for the families, why aren't we trying to find out what really happened? Why has the investigation stopped? That's what you're saying. Even the most benign of videos, Max, is ripe for deletion, and the channels are ripe for extinction, basically. This is madness, what we're entering here.
It is. It's absolute madness. And, you know, if my channel gets deleted, I mean, I've got nearly 175,000 subscribers. I've got 11 years' work on that channel. 11 years of my life has gone into that channel. I just delete it. I mean, I've got one more strike and the channel gets deleted. You know, what's to say they're not going to go back and look for a video from 5, 6 years ago and just put a strike on it, you know? So that's the problem. And they just don't want this message getting out there. They don't want anybody questioning this. And it's extremely important. And I've got a backup channel. I've got my old channel that I left because they put a strike on that years ago. They put reduced it to 15-minute uploads for 3 months, and it was 14 months later I went to my other channel and thought, well, I'm sick of this. So, and that's called AOD Scarecrow. If you go to my Crow House channel on YouTube, the Crow House on YouTube, you'll see a link there to AOD Scarecrow. That's my old channel, and I'm going to be uploading to that from now on for as long as they let me. If that goes down as well, then I'll upload to BitChute. It's kind of weird now. I just went and looked at my channel before while we're talking, And it says on the dashboard page that uploads are disabled and that comments are disabled, custom thumbnails are disabled. I can't chat in my community board. But then I go to the upload page and it tells me I can upload videos up to 15 minutes. So I don't know what's going on there. Maybe they've changed it because I sent them an appeal and said, well, what's going on? This was just text and a yin-yang. Maybe they've let me. Maybe they're going to let me have 15-minute uploads. But I don't know. It says on the other page, on the dashboard page, that no uploads. It says uploads are disabled.
So that's very interesting. That's very interesting. Go ahead.
Maybe I'll try to upload a couple of minutes just on the time of my show on Saturday and see if it takes, and just let people know that the video is on the other channel, and I'll just see if the upload works. I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah, because 2 weeks ago I interviewed Fetzer about Sandy Hook. It went. YouTube is a nuisance to me. It's a great boon for you and for most people, and you've done an extraordinary thing with your channel. I became obviously very petulant and sulky last year after they deleted my channel. I managed to get 90,000 subscribers, and there was lots of really interesting interviews on there with people like yourself and many others, and I got fed up of it. And they told me they would never let me monetize anyway. And in fact, recently they said they'll never let me monetize again. And fair play to them, they gave me a reason. They said because you reuse content. So I do a monologue for a half an hour where I play clips from Sky News or the BBC by way of dissecting them and critiquing them using fair use. But Google have said to me, that doesn't matter anymore. If you stop doing that, you can monetize your videos. And I said, well, I can't stop doing that because that's my act, as it were. That's my show. Yeah. I do that for 30 minutes, then I interview people like Max Egan. So they said no, but just very briefly, they deleted the entire show, because I don't upload interviews anymore. I upload the entire show to YouTube for speed purposes. And they said hate speech and harassment and bullying. And I got back to them and said, listen, the show is... it's either crap or it's good. It's up to you to decide. It's subjective. But with Fetzer, there's no harassment or bullying there. You know, I repeatedly played Lenny Posner's audio clips and others and said to Jim, you can't tell me that these people are making it up. I did my job, Max. Now, 2 days later, Google or YouTube put the show back up there and basically said the strike has been removed. So I don't know what's going on with Google, to be honest.
Yeah, it's got me, man. I don't know. They just censor and strike anything they want. I mean, that's just the way it is. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do with my channel, how long I'll be able to even keep this up, you know. But they don't want any talk about this at all. And they're just, you know, it's really, really coming. And it's so important that people pay attention to what is coming. And people out there who really consider themselves to be part of the truth movement, well, think about the truth and really get to the truth and be in integrity and don't just believe what you're told by people. You know, look at things for yourself. You know, don't get led and don't just, you know, cop the party line because it's the popular consensus. Really look at things and look at the opportunities that some of these things are posing for us, because, you know, we can expose the whole... the way they do it, I mean, it's right there. We've got it on film. They messed up so badly with this film, Richie.
Yeah.
You know, and we've got it there. We can show, we can see how they do it. We can see the extra players. We can see how they put it all together. You know, so it's a huge opportunity for us if we can clear the smoke and clear the air with this. And that should be allowed to be reported. You know, people should know the truth about what's going on. You know, and we have an opportunity to show the people of the world that we're not stupid, we're not crazy, we're not a bunch of conspiracy theorists. Here it is, it's on film. It shows you that whatever that happened, we don't know what happened. We don't know what the details are, but whatever it is, it's not what the government is telling you, and they're taking your guns under false pretenses.
That's broad.
It shows
this out,
you right there on the film.
The film is excellent. You've got this guy totally unconcerned by Tarrant walking around with a gun, and he shows up other times. I urge people to watch it. Make your own mind up. Don't just believe me, because I agree with Max that the video is very, very disturbing. Let's broaden this out, my friend, while we have you. Max Egan, live on the line, thecrowhouse.com. Find Max on YouTube while he's still there. And he's not pleading the martyr here, Max Egan. You know, Max Egan was the first person to kick off a stink last year when the Richie Allen Show YouTube channel was deleted. He's the first guy to kick up a stink when people on the far right whom he disagrees with have their channels deleted, right? This is the old adage, you know, they came for the Jews and I did nothing. They came for the Muslims and I did nothing. We can't allow this. Got to stand up for people, regardless of whether you agree with them or not. Let's broaden it out, my friend, because we have the Health Secretary in the United Kingdom, Matt Hancock, saying that Facebook needs to not only delete Facebook accounts of anti-vaxxers, but they've got to introduce artificial intelligence, Max, so that if me and you... Imagine Max Egan never did a radio show. And imagine there's never been any radio show here with me. Imagine we never did anything. You work for... You're a doctor, Max. You work in a hospital. And I work on a building site. And we're just mates on Facebook. And you said to me, well, Rich, congratulations on you and Caroline having a baby girl. Oh, thanks very much, Max. Are you vaccinating, Richie? I'm not sure, Max. I don't think so. The health secretary in this country has actually, and I'm not making this up, I'm not exaggerating, has suggested that that conversation be deleted and we be kicked off because vaccines are safe, don't you know? So let's broaden this out. This is where this is going. There won't be a place on planet Earth, or at least online, where we can talk about stuff like this.
It's going even further than that. I mean, with the new laws they've just brought in, the copyright laws in the EU, you won't even be able to show a picture from a website from BBC or whatever. You'll get hit for copyright or whatever. And the way it's going, with what will come out of Christchurch and the need to keep tabs on everybody, pretty soon when 5G is in place and all this, you won't be able to do anything unless you're vaccinated. You won't be able to go and buy a plane ticket. It'll get to the point where you can't even go into a supermarket if you're not vaccinated, because you may be a danger to the other people. This is the way it's going to go. And the vaccines themselves will have the microchips and the nanotech and all this sort of stuff in it. People don't realize what we're facing here. They really don't realize how far that they can take this, and how far they're prepared to take it, and how far they are taking it. You know, and this like I keep saying to people, this event in Christchurch is 9/11 2.0. If you can think of 9/11 as the beginning of the end game, well, this is what happened in Christchurch is the beginning of the final move of the end game. This is what is going to bring about the whole blanket lockdown that's going to come from this Christchurch event, which is why they did it in sleepy little New Zealand. Yeah, you know, it can happen anywhere. The enemy is your average white guy next door who never did anything wrong, and he's got all of these ideologies that you see in the truth movement. That's the way they've set this up to be. And the people who are pushing this whole CGI and fake stuff are playing right into the hands of the controllers. That's why there's such a huge troll fest to push it. And the speed that it rolled out, because they messed up so badly with the video, because you can see the extra players. So they've got to get this meme out there and get people focusing on all these other details that they're telling you are important, which aren't, so that you don't look at all the details that are important, which is showing you what this really is and how the government, how much they are lying about it, and the opportunity that it gives us should this get exposed to the people of New Zealand and the people of the world quick enough. You know, so... we've got to see how we're being played with this, Richie. So many people have dropped the ball on this, and it's a really, really important event. I cannot stress that enough. You know, I'm feeling the repercussions here in Australia. So many websites, BitChute, all sorts of stuff. Websites have been censored across Australia, like hundreds of websites we can't access now since this Christchurch event. Like I said, they've got a hotline in New Zealand, and Vinny Eastwood's having the cops come around to his house. Soon that's going to come to our own country. Soon we, the independent media, the truth movement, people who've been trying to wake the world up, are going to be seen as potential right-wing extremists. And if not, then the major voices, such as you or I, are going to be portrayed as those who encouraged Brendan Tarrant to do what he did. That's the way this is going. If people do not pay attention to what is happening and how all this is going to go down, I cannot stress the importance of this enough.
Let me endorse what you said about it coming here. Big story today. Obviously, there's a great time difference between Max and us here in the UK. Max is quite a few hours, 9 or 10 hours ahead of us there. As we're talking and recording this morning, it's just after 10 o'clock. I take the old dog out for a jog early, very early in the morning after I drive the missus to work. And big story here, Max, which you might not have come across yet. The police chief council, the National Police Chief Council, has come out and has warned, this is amazing, the language they use, has warned campaigners not to inflame tensions around Brexit. And they have warned people about using terminology like traitors and enemies. Now, what I see, and I'm like yourself, I'm a pacifist, I do not endorse violence as a means to solving problems ever. Nobody should ever assault anybody, should never punch anybody, you should never threaten anybody, don't be a coward, don't call people whores, don't call them the C word online, don't do that stuff. You know, beat them with ideas, don't be a bully and a thug, don't do that. However, the likes of Yvette Cooper, 70% of her constituents voted to leave the European Union. Cooper is one of the chief architects of destroying the UK vote to leave the European Union. These people are traitors. They are. Now, calling them a traitor is not the same as urging or hoping or wishing harm on them. I would not wish any harm on Yvette Cooper or anybody else or any politician. But here we have the police saying, we've got 10,000 police officers ready to deploy at a day's notice if there's a no-deal Brexit. The army are on standby. And the chairman of the National Police Chief Council is warning people, not asking people to think carefully about the language you use, but warning people about using words like traitors and enemies of the people. So it is coming here, Max. It's here already.
Absolutely. And Brexit, I mean, Brexit represents the end of the democratic vote. That's what it is. I mean, you know, we want to do this. What do you think, folks? So we'll have a vote. Everyone voted no. Well, we're going to vote again because you voted the way we don't want. You know, and what they've done, I mean, since then, all the stuff like searches at bus stations and all sorts of stuff, you know, oh, because of Brexit. No, it's not because of Brexit. Just because you want to give people a hard time, put them in fear and tell them it's all going to turn pear-shaped and terrible and there's going to be crime everywhere and there's going to be searches and seizures everywhere if we leave the European Union. You're just trying to get people in fear to make them vote the way the government wants them to vote. It's a joke. The people already voted. The government should be doing something about that, but they're not because it's the end of the democratic vote. They don't care what the people say. Theresa May wants to just go and do what she wants to do. She wants little blue passports. That's what she wants. You know, and the hypocrisy of this woman, you know, the level of insincerity of this woman. The way she was on TV there and she was saying, oh, how terribly and how sad she is over the poor Muslims who were killed in prayer in Christchurch. We should never kill Muslims in prayer. When Theresa May has been bombing Muslims in prayer in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Syria, in every way you can think
Yemen,
of, for years
Yemen.
And years on end, you know, the level of hypocrisy from this woman, it's absolutely incredible. Just to see them using this event as a political football. And the same with Jacinda Ardern, you know, putting on the Muslim headscarf and pretending that she actually cares. You know, the level of insincerity. And Muslim people saying, why is she doing that? We don't want her to do that. That's so insincere. That's terrible that she's doing that. She's not a Muslim. They all, half of them felt like she was insulting her, insulting them, you know. So the level of hypocrisy of these people. But Brexit, man, it's the end of the democratic vote. What do they care what the people want? They're just going to do it anyway. And all of this fear, and like I said, searches at bus stations and all this stuff, just to try to get people to vote the way Theresa May wants them to vote. It's a complete joke.
Isn't it amazing for me to be sympathising with the Muslims? I mean, you are a human being with a heart. I am. It's a terrible thing for those people in Christchurch. I can't imagine it. I'm not going to virtue signal now and say that they're in my prayers because they're not. You know, heaven help them. They're not in my prayers. You know, we've all got our own lives to live. It happened on the other side of the world. It's terrible. But I'm not going to lie and pretend to be this lovely guy. I do feel sorry for them. And I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy what's happened to them. But if Theresa May cared so much about Muslims, we wouldn't have Special Forces British Army personnel on the ground in Yemen working with Saudi-backed militias and fucking murdering Yemenis who happen to be Muslims. It's insane. You know, and again, fair play to RT for the work they've done on that. Not only are we giving the Saudi Arabian government all the means and the technology to kill hundreds of thousands of Yemenis, but we've sent our own crazy trained special forces guys in there to do it. You're right, the hypocrisy is sickening.
And look what they're bombing in Yemen. They're bombing schools, they're bombing mosques. You know, everything, shopping centres, everything, children, buses, everything. You know, and she pretends to care about Muslims. What an absolute hypocrite this woman is, you know.
What are we going to do about, you've touched on something, we mightn't get into this because we'll, for the sake of today's program, we'll do another 10, 15 minutes with your permission today. And it's too big a subject to broaden out. This, it's weird for me to even be saying what I'm going to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. You, for years, and others like you, were not, I don't want to use the word fighting because it's violent, but you were working hard to expose the mainstream media and what it does and who it's controlled by. Aren't you a bit now, aren't you kind of fighting a two-front war now? Because as well as the nonsense and the ineptitude in some ways, but also the corruption of the media, you've also got to fight the establishment promoting what appears to be independent or alternative media, but isn't. Because you've talked earlier on about the that element of the independent media that says that everything was a hoax, it never happened, and that threatens and harasses the victims' families. The paradigm has shifted incredibly in the last few years. It's not just the mainstream media now that you've got to be highlighting. You've also got to be highlighting these kind of cretinous people who've evolved in the last few years without calling for their censorship, because nobody should be censored. But you've got to keep them in mind as well, because in one way, they're just as bad as the mainstream media, right?
Oh, look, they're worse. They're worse. I mean, some of the articles that I've read, you know, I read an article from David Robert Steele the other day. The first half of the article had so much truth in it. Exactly where we're going, what the deep state's doing, what the surveillance grid's going to be, everything in there, which is absolutely exactly what people need to know. And then the last half of the article was all about how it was all fake and CGI and no victims, oh, and no right blood and all this. So everyone's going to read that. And the last half of the article they've read is all, and they're going to go, oh, wow, this guy's a clown. Okay, he's a conspiracy theorist. They're going to throw the entire first half of the article out. See, that's the way counterintelligence works. You know, if there's a leak, you don't try to cover up the leak. You embellish the leak and you add to the leak and you put all this stuff in there which makes it unbelievable, or you get people focusing on details of the leak which aren't important, but you tell them that they are, so they don't notice on the other details of the leak which are actually relevant and important. That's the way it works. That's the way counterintelligence works. And when you look at it, the neuro-linguistic program, I saw one report from somebody. And it said, when he enters the hallway, fires a bunch of shots, and you hear a woman scream. And then there's all of this other stuff about, oh, it must have been an overlay of a soundtrack, and a little something weird happened here, and all this sorts of – another – a few lines after he says that woman scream, and then it goes to the next section. Because it's like, you know, like 7 minutes 48, this happens, then 7 minutes 50, this happens. Only 2 seconds later. But it's separated into a second section, and then he says he turns to fire at a person in the room to the right. Well, that's just this separation, because the woman's scream was the person in the room to the right. It was a woman. He doesn't mention it's a woman. He separates it by two sections. He puts a little rave in the middle to get you distracted and away from the fact that he mentioned a woman's scream before. So this is how neuro-linguistic programming works. Distraction. Careful distraction and misdirection. So they kind of tell you what's happening, but they lead you in another direction through the neuro-linguistic programming they put in there by using the word person instead of woman, by associating it in one little section, then another section 2 seconds later in a different paragraph separated from the first with a little rave between where he says woman scream and the person in the room. So this is how NLP works. You've got to read how these articles are constructed and where the misdirection is, and you see it in all of these articles, you know. So this is how counterintelligence works. Like, they get the truth and they pepper it with lies so people throw the baby out with the bathwater. You'll find you'll get a lot of truth from these sites. A lot of these articles will contain a good deal of truth, but then they'll be peppered with all sorts of stuff and all sorts of lies. I mean, you know, Robert Steele, I mean, this man a few months ago or a year ago, whatever, was saying that there were child slaves on Mars, for God's sake. You know, and now people are believing him when he's saying that this is all fake in Christchurch. I mean, it's classic counterintelligence, Richie. You're poisoning the well, that's how it works. You know, and all these people, I mean, they say they're ex-CIA. Well, I don't know. Is there any such thing as ex-CIA?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I spoke to David Robert Steele a couple of times. I think the last time was about 18 months ago, and he hasn't been back on. And I haven't invited him on, not because of anything that he'd said previously to me, but because it's kind of an exercise in futility, because I think if I invite him back on, I'm going to have to get stuck into him about some of the stuff that he said since the last time he was on, and then it gets messy. And I love a good argument, as anybody who's ever listened to my program knows, but I just think I don't know whether I want to get into that. But I
even saw a similar thing with NLP with David Robert Steele. I think he was with Ben Fulford, who I don't trust any further than I can throw a submarine. But and he was saying, someone had questioned him on this, about saying there were child slaves on Mars. And he's there saying, oh, look, I never said there were child sex slaves on Mars. Again, the NLP, he added sex. I never said there were child sex slaves on Mars. So he takes it to a little bit more of the extreme to make it unbelievable. So you throw the baby out with the bathwater. No, he never said there were child sex slaves on Mars. He said there were child slaves on Mars.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? This is how NLP works.
Yeah, it's mad. And I, one of the things that's really worried me is, again, just to go a little bit deeper for the last couple of minutes. Again, it's never, ever been about me. You know, I've been doing radio programs at every level for years and years and years. The show that I do is for people like yourself who have done the hard graft, you know, who've looked at things. I don't look at things the way you look at things. I basically put together a satirical look at the news for a half an hour, and then I invite somebody on who's got something to say. And I work bloody hard now, don't get me wrong, it's difficult to do it every day, but I don't do the research you do, so I bring you on, you see, and others, and I enjoy listening to you and others. What I'm witnessing, and I'm going to write about this when I get a chance, the establishment or the system is promoting heavily the people on the far right and on the very far left, people whom are perpetuating the notion that either Donald Trump is the answer or either somebody on the left is the answer. To make it simple, those researchers and those program creators who have long ago departed from the idea that you could ever achieve success through the electoral system, we're being marginalised and shadow banned and destroyed. I mean, I remember last year when the old Richie Allen YouTube had 90,000 plus subscribers. Tommy the Tit Robinson, God love him, had about 63,000, and his channel was older than mine. Now Tommy, but I know YouTube have banned him as well, and I don't agree with this. Now he's got nearly 400,000, and I was kicked off and had to start all over again. Now it's not about me. There are much more, you know, advanced people than me who make programs who know more than I do. But I've come to understand this. As long as you are promoting the system, no matter how crazy it is what you are saying, Max, you're going to be okay and you're going to be monetized. If you're trying to open people's minds to thinking a little bit about the fact that the whole system is propagated on lies and evil and sickness, and you can never vote somebody in to change it, those researchers and program creators are being eliminated. Am I being a bit paranoid, or do you think I'm onto something?
Oh, no, that's absolutely true. It's absolutely true. And, you know, people have to understand as well, you know, I've been doing this for a long time. I've been researching this stuff for, you know, most of my life.
Yeah.
And I've been online doing this, doing a weekly radio show for almost 11 years now. I'm into my 11th year. It's over 10 years. And in all that time, I've never pointed the finger at anybody. I've never named anybody as a COINTEL agent or anything. I've never tried to rock the boat. I've never tried to upset any other researchers. I've never pointed my finger at anyone. You know, so it's a big thing for me to do this and to call these people out. But this poisoning of the well has to stop. It absolutely has to stop. And you know, we've got to see what's coming. We really do.
Here's a question for you. Here's the question. Sorry for the interruption. Here's the question for you now. Let me have a go at you there now. Does it have to stop, or do people have to become a bit more cynical, a bit more sceptical, and a bit more independent? Because by it having to stop, I'm happy enough for the COINTEL morons to keep putting their shite out. That's free speech. I'd be more interested in people having a bit more scepticism about everything they read and hear, no matter where it comes from. I think you've said that already, to be fair.
Well, yeah, I mean, people need to learn how to think. They need to learn some discernment, and they need to think for themselves. Look at these things and think for themselves. You know, too many people just accept the narratives that they're given. You know, and when I do my shows, I'm not giving you any narrative. I'm just giving you a free thought flow. I don't know. I'm just talking. You know, I'm just a guy in a shed, and I'm just observing things, and I'm giving you my perspective for the week. I mean, I get things wrong sometimes. I come back and correct that. I mean, I'm not a know-all or be-all or a see-all or anything. I'm just a guy who observes things and offers a perspective. You know, but there's a lot of people who are seen as reputable sources, and people go to these sources and they expect valid news, and then they go and spread that news. You know, and this is classic social engineering is what we're seeing. And a lot of people are poisoning the well, and it's got to stop because it's going to lead to our downfall. It really is. And it's rolling out right now. And it's so important that people pay attention to it. It really is, Richie.
Good stuff. I think Google might very well remove that strike, and that'll be a good thing. It is a terrible thing, the hegemony now enjoyed by Google and Facebook and all that. It is. But within these organisations, there are ordinary folks working there. I think I saw that 2 weeks ago when the show that had been deleted with Jim was restored. Let's hope that the channel is restored to its full and proper status so you can keep putting your excellent shows. Because it's not just the live shows. You do other analysis, like the analysis you did of the Christchurch shooting. So just keep on keeping on doing that. As long as this programme is broadcasting in Manchester here, and I'm a little bit worried about that because I know that Ofcom, I know that the UK government wants to regulate shows like this, not just this show, obviously, but they want to get rid of the standalone sole traders like me. They not necessarily want to get rid of us, but they want to regulate us, making it, which would make it difficult then in the future for me to talk to you about Christchurch. So, look, as long as it's here, mate, I've known you since my days in Spain, latterly, and then TPV. What I can say about you is whether I agree with you on every single issue or not is irrelevant. I obviously don't, no more than you would agree with me. But what I can say, 100% with absolute conviction, you've a heart of gold. You've never trolled anybody. You've never gone after anybody. There's not a hateful bone in your body. You're an intelligent bloke that thinks for himself. You put some interesting things out there, and nobody could ever say there's anything hateful or anything wrong about it. So as long as you're doing it, there's always room for you here on this little show, my friend.
Well, thank you very much, Richie. It's been good to come and chat to you, brother. And please spread the word about the new channel that I'll be at for a while, AOD Scarecrow. Get as many subscribers as I can to move over there. That's where I'll be posting my shows for the next 3 months. Well, as long as the channel remains open anyway.
Yeah, Max Egan on with me today. Recorded very early. Well, not very early. I think it was about 9:30 when I did it this morning. It's obviously, there's a big time difference between us here in Manchester and Max. So obviously there was a lot of tweets came in there. Thank you for them. I'll read a few of them now, but I couldn't put any of your points to Max. I did anyway. Number of you, including Martin, are asking about other people's channels being monetized. I can't answer, Martin, why other people's channels are monetized. Google, for all the criticism I've given them, at least had the manners, finally, to explain to me why this particular programme can't monetize. And they said it's because of, it's a number of things. Most definitely reused content. So the monologue, which I explained in my conversation with Max, is packed with little bits of audio. It's produced. The monologue is produced and it needs content, right? I'm not basically infringing copyright of Sky or the BBC. I am not, because there are fair use laws, which I'm very familiar with as a content creator. I'm entitled to use that content by way of critiquing the material. I'm not claiming it as my own. I'm critiquing it. And every time I'm overemphasizing the content came from Kay at Sky or from Laura Koonsberg at the BBC. And that's legislated for. So Google really shouldn't be telling me you can't monetize because of the monologue. But it isn't just the monologue. It's other things as well. Even the Creative Commons music, which comes on at the end. Even the images that we use for our YouTube videos. Basically, in a roundabout way, they're saying, however long, we will find a way to demonetize you. Don't worry about it. Don't keep applying for monetization. We'll find reasons not to monetize your channel. So I don't believe in fighting battles you can't win. I don't believe in getting annoyed or fed up or depressed. Because until they demonetized my YouTube channel a year before they deleted it. And when my YouTube channel was monetized, it was beginning to bring in money every month, and it was going in an upward trajectory, meaning I was convinced, and I shared this information with my friends, Jean-Anne Crowley and Hayden Hewitt, media people like myself. I said, if it continues, I'll never need to solicit a donation ever again, because it was looking very good. It was looking like, you know, £3,000, £3,500, £4,000 a month was likely further down the road, because the videos were starting to get a lot of hits, a lot of views, and they demonetized. And then a year after, they deleted. And this new channel, I don't know how many thousands of subscribers it's got now. I think it's, is it 20? I genuinely haven't a clue, because I don't care. I only upload every night to YouTube because certain people, they just live on YouTube. I don't want to do it because it's a pain in the backside to me, and it's no good to me. The bulk of my listeners are live listeners in their tens of thousands tonight and every other night that I'm on. And they get me on iTunes, on Spotify, and they listen through TuneIn Radio. Google and YouTube is worthless to me now. But I'll continue to put it on there, even though it takes me over an hour after I finish my day every day to do it. I'll do it, so long as some people are getting the programme that way. Why other people's channels haven't been demonetized, I don't know. There's no jealousy here. There's no envy. I haven't a clue. I don't know. Good luck to them. I hope they stay monetized. You know, if they're bringing in 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 views on each video and they can monetize it, they deserve it. Good luck to them. But I don't know why some are monetized and some are not. What I do know for certain, Tommy Robinson is the exception, because they demonetized him and now they've basically restricted his channel. But on the far right, and on the, I don't know, the progressive left, those channels are being promoted by YouTube. How does YouTube do that? Well, it makes them appear in millions of people's YouTube timelines. Because YouTube has got a timeline too. If you've got a YouTube channel and you log on to it, YouTube will present on the homepage lots of different video choices for you. That's how it works, right? So if I go onto YouTube tonight, there'll be all sorts of stuff on there. For me, it's usually football and music, rock concerts, life stuff, because that's what I'm into when I'm having a bit of downtime, right? Bit of tennis, bit of snooker. And what Google YouTube is doing is, my stuff is not showing up. Let me read you something. Now, while I've got it, this is very interesting. This was sent to me by Raj. Some people think Raj doesn't exist because I've got access to the Facebook page, even though I don't use it. That's looked after by my mate Raj. But Raj is, he's a genuine person. He's a real guy, is Raj. Let me read you this. This is genuine now. Oh, Jesus. Lord save us. Raj sent me something. 'Twas one of my YouTube subscribers who said that not only had my uploads not been showing on his YouTube page, but he had been unsubscribed from my YouTube page, even though he didn't unsubscribe himself. And when he put that comment on one of our YouTube videos, a dozen other people said, it happened to me as well. I don't see the Richie Allen Show. It's hidden from me. And I've been subscribed to both his channels, and now I'm not subscribed. And that's what's happening. That's what Google and YouTube is doing. That's shadow banning. Now, I don't care. I'm not playing the martyr. I don't care. I don't want to have anything to do with them. I'd rather not do it. I'm talking myself into not uploading to YouTube anymore. But I will for the foreseeable future. But that's how they do it. And at the same time, they are exposing you to the likes of Rebel Media and all this stuff and the equivalent channels on the left. Why? Because you must believe in the left-right paradigm. And presenters like yours truly, because I'm not a researcher, I'm a mouthpiece, a big mouth who gets some interesting people to come on the programme. Big mouths like me, who beat the mantra, beat the drum, to say that the whole system has to be torn down. Every one of them is beholden to the financial elites of the world. Elections don't work, and that's not the way. And I'm not the only person who says this. Our channels and Facebook pages are shadow banned, especially those of us who make professionally sounding and looking content. I'll give you an example. I've not looked at the Facebook page for... I deleted my own Facebook page over a year ago. But Roger puts the programs on Facebook every night. God love him, he does it. I said, you can have the channel, the page, I don't care about it, do what you want with it. So he's got it. There are 20,020, I think, subscribers to the Richie Allen Facebook page. There were 20,020 last year. Right? That's how they do it. And that's why I don't play with them. I don't play with them. I don't play with Facebook. I deleted it. I don't play with Google, YouTube. I don't care anymore. You know, I'm happy to do it live. Get people listening live and interacting on Twitter. Get them grabbing the podcast from Podomatic or iTunes or Spotify. Let them go on the richieallen.co.uk website where the program sits there every day. Google and YouTube, stop. I don't mean Max now. Max's gripe is genuine. It's very important. But for everybody else who's new to YouTube and Google, who's new to it, forget about it. Forget about it as a means to distributing your content and growing an audience. Forget about it unless your politics are on the far right or the far left. Then you'll do very well. It's a gold mine. You know what I'm getting at, right? Right. It's a gold mine. David Icke said to me 2 years ago, this is true. I think this might very much, this might sound very egotistical now. It might sound like I'm boasting, but I'm not. Please believe me. 2 years ago in a private conversation, David Icke said to me, you know what, Richie? I said, what, Ikey? He said, if me and you on your radio show, and me, if we went down this bullshit anti-Muslim road, and if we went down this alt-right road, me and you, with our experience and our abilities, we'd make millions and millions of pounds. And I said, Ikey, you've got that spot on in one, my son. Of course we would. Because I can do what Tommy Robinson does far better than Tommy Robinson. But I can't do that because it's bullshit. It's as simple as that. But if we did, we wouldn't be shadow banned. We wouldn't be demonetized. We wouldn't be deleted. That's just the way it is. Anyway, we've had a decent week, haven't we? Chris Busby this week, Jake Morfonios, the lovely Adele Jarrett Kerr tonight, Max Egan as well. We've had some good guests this week. I'll be back with you Sunday morning at the usual time of 11 a.m. British summer time, where we'll have a look at the papers as we ordinarily do. A lot of comments came in there. I haven't seen them, so apologies for that. I'll do better on Sunday. I'll do better on Sunday. That's my promise. It's milling it down here in Manchester. Absolutely piddling down. It hasn't changed since I came on air. This is the Smashing Pumpkins. Have a fantastic weekend. Speak to you on Sunday. Bye now. Bye.